Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday. Every Monday, you and I have the opportunity to meet another man who has agreed to share his path with us. Today's guest is certainly no different. I am very pleased to introduce you to Michael Taylor, who is a leading motivational speaker, and he works to empower men and women struggling to overcome life's hardships, which sounds to me, Michael Taylor, like you're pretty busy most of the time. Welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you, Pamela. Yes, pretty busy empowering people to take a positive attitude. That's what I'm busy doing because there's so much negativity out there. I think it's time to inject something positive. So I'm really looking forward to the conversation today.
Well, sounds good. Now, let's talk a little bit about your backstory, if you will, because okay. It's a story that, you know, according to the quote unquote experts, according to the quote unquote statistics, you should not be here today. So give us a little sense of where you grew up and what that was like.
Well, I was born in the inner city projects of Corpus Christi, Texas, to a single mom with six kids. And we were the poster children for poverty back in the 60s. And despite all of those obstacles, my mom instilled in me a simple belief. And that belief was that anything was possible. And so I held on to that belief all of my life. Well, I lived with my mom from birth to six. And when I was 6 years old, my oldest sister got extremely ill. And my mom had to take us to live with my dad, who, by the way, I didn't know because he had left very early and I had never really met him. And so from 6 to 13, I lived with my father, who happened to live with his mother, who was the grandmother from hell. And she was a raging alcoholic who took all of her anger and frustrations out on me as a kid. And so try to imagine the worst childhood a child could have and multiply that by 10. And that was my childhood from 6 to 13. And I call it my 7 years of hell. After those 7 years, I was reunited with my mom and was in junior high at the time, graduated junior high, went to high school. I got to high school, and in the 11th grade, I went to a seminar, and this guy convinced me that I could get rich selling vacuum cleaners. And so I dropped out of high school in the 11th grade. Now, we've all made bad choices in life, and that was obviously a very bad choice that I made because I never sold a single vacuum cleaner. And so there I am, you know, high school dropout, no prospects for successful future, but yet there was something in me that my mom told me, is that anything was possible. And so fortunately for me, I secured a job with a multi-million dollar building supply center. And I worked extremely hard, and I climbed the corporate ladder. And as a matter of fact, I became the youngest manager in the history of that company. And so at the tender age of 22, I was living the American dream. I had the house, the wife, the 2.5 kids and all of that. And by society standards, I was pretty successful. And then within about a 6-year time frame, my American dream turned into the American nightmare as I went through a divorce, bankruptcy, a foreclosure, and a deep state of depression. And during the darkest period of my life, I received a miracle. I was sitting up late one night because I was so depressed because I couldn't sleep. And then I noticed that all the books on my bookshelf had something to do with making money. And as I sat there looking at the books, this question just popped in my head. And the question was this: Michael, what if you took all the energy and effort you've used in trying to get rich and simply learn how to be happy? And it was that one question that literally changed my life. And from that moment on, I stopped reading books on business and making money, and I started reading psychology and philosophy and spirituality. And so I went on this amazing journey of transformation. And so for the last 25 years, that's exactly what I've been doing, transforming myself from the inside out. And what I decided to do was put together all the lessons I've learned of all the adversities I overcame and share it with other people. And that's why I wrote Adversity is Your Greatest Ally.
And now, let me ask you this. I just want to go back a bit to six. You lived with your mom from 0 to 6, and then all of a sudden you weren't living with your mom. What was your sense of that, and were you the only child that, or did all of the children go to live with your dad except for your sister who was ill?
Well, again, there were six of us, and three of us who had the same father. We moved in with our father.
Okay.
And so I was the youngest of those three, and my sense was I was the one that was experiencing the most abuse, because for whatever reason, my grandmother and I just butted heads as a child. I mean, she would say things about my mom, and I would fight her back. I said, don't say anything bad about my mom. And I was really defiant, even as a six-year-old. And so we just had this really tumultuous relationship. And it was, as I mentioned, my 7 years of pure hell.
And, you know, I'm thinking about the almost the double, triple loss. I mean, you were living with your mom, and then you weren't. You were with all of your siblings, and then you weren't. And then you were living with this person you really didn't know. So your sense of safety and security and sort of sameness that children often crave, structure, that was gone. And then you had the grandmother from another planet. So it's just kind of extraordinary that you had all of those losses, all of those confusing experiences at the tender age of six.
Well, the sad part about that is that as a result of that experience, being separated from my mom, it ingrained in me a fear of abandonment. And so for a lot of years, I had that internal fear of being abandoned. And it took a lot of healing for me to overcome that. And so I think one of the really important things that we as men have to talk about is the emotional and psychological traumas that happened to us during our childhood and how to heal from it. And I talk a little bit about that also in the book.
Let me ask you about the book. The name of it, as you said, is Adversity is Your Greatest Ally. And I know there are folks listening who are saying, no, I don't think so. So he must be talking about a different kind of adversity from the one that I live or that I know. Talk about that theory that, or that lived lesson, if you will, that at least for you, adversity was an ally.
Well, it has come to my attention, and this is Michael Taylor's belief, that every adversity in our lives brings us a gift if we have the awareness to perceive it. So as I think back of all the adversities that I went through, as painful as they were, as difficult as my life has been, I can now see how every single event has shaped me to be the man that I am today. If you were to ask me if I would change anything about my life, I would say no. I wouldn't change a single piece, even the most painful pieces, because what I recognize now is that every single adversity shaped and molded me to be the man that I am today. Now, this I can say in retrospect, and after some 25 years of some deep research and, again, my own healing, but I am absolutely convinced if we're willing to face adversity with an open heart and an open mind, every adversity that shows up in our lives brings us a gift, brings us a lesson, if we're simply open-minded and open-hearted enough to receive it.
You know, it occurs to me, Michael, that if folks could really embrace that philosophy, as you said, even the worst of experiences can bring about some new information, can bring about some hope. Perhaps that things can be different, that you can learn and grow from, even as you've said, even the worst of experiences.
Well, if you look throughout history, the overwhelming majority of stories that we call success stories, there's always adversity. Adversity is built into life, I believe. And so I personally look at life through a spiritual lens. And so for me, what I recognize is that there is a power greater than myself at work here. And when I put myself in alignment with this power, then it gives me the strength to overcome the adversities, because I recognize that this power within me is what can support and empower me to move through adversities. So I think it's important to have a spiritual foundation to recognize the things that are happening to me, in my experience, aren't bad. They're just experiences. And Shakespeare said, nothing is either good or bad until you think it so. And so if I think that these adversities are lessons, then I approach all adversities differently. If I think adversities are bad, then I'm going to approach it differently also. So for me, I focus my attention on what's right, what's working, what's good, what's love. Then I handle adversities in that way.
You're right. If you focus on adversity, if you interpret it as evidence of your being a bad person or you're being punished for something, then that's going to take you down a very different path from what can I learn about this experience?
Exactly. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people that buy into that philosophy that we're bad people. There are some religions that teach that you're born a sinner, you're born in sin. And so you've got all this negative conditioning. Well, if you hold on to that idea, that belief, then when you experience adversity, then you're going to see it as, well, I deserve this because I'm a bad person, I'm a sinner, I'm being punished. Well, I don't see the world that way. I believe that we are born perfect. We are divine expressions of the infinite intelligence that created this amazing universe that we live in. And this intelligence is love. This intelligence can only do one thing, which is love us. And so the adversities that we experience when faced from that perspective tells us that this presence loves us. And when those bad things happen, it's not that it's punishing us. It's simply that I've moved out of alignment with the love that's always there. And so it's my responsibility to get back in alignment and recognize the love that's present.
I think that's a powerful lesson and certainly a powerful perspective that perhaps as more of us come to that awareness, we will have a very different planet.
Yes, and that is my intention, is to share what I consider to be my truth, not the truth, but my truth. This is my truth. This is what works for Michael Taylor. And in my speaking and writing and sharing with others, people who are open-minded enough to embrace life this way, it makes handling life's adversities a lot easier.
You begin adversity as your greatest ally with a quote that we often hear, but I think you bring to it a very different sense of understanding. You assure folks that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And how many times have we heard, not to worry, there's light at the end of the tunnel? And just as individuals, it was like, yeah, right, I can't even see the tunnel. What are you talking about? There's a light.
Well, again, I think the most difficult part is when we're right smack dab in the middle of adversity. For example, whoever's listening to this program right now, they may be right in the middle of it, and the hurricane may be blowing, and I'm saying be positive. Well, a lot of the things that I'm talking about, I can see in retrospect. And so I think that's the beauty of lessons. Because when I share the lessons that I learned when I was in the middle of my hurricane, then it helps other people recognize that, you know what, if he can come through that, then maybe I can too. So it provides hope. And when you have hope, then you can start transforming your thinking. Then you can start saying, you know what, maybe there is another way to look at this. Because it all begins in mind. Everything happens within the mind first. And so one of the things I talk about is the power of imagination. And so what I had to be willing to do is, during the darkest period of my life, what really saved me was my imagination. Because even as a child, I would imagine myself overcoming the challenges that I was facing. I remember we used to live in a house that was sitting up on cinder blocks, and I used to go under the house, and I had this little private space, my little sacred space underneath these concrete steps where I would go and I would play with my toys and just hang out. Well, in that space, in this sacred safe space, I would sit there and just imagine what it would be like to get back with my mom. And I could see my mom, and I held on to that idea that one day I was going to get back to my mom. And no matter how bad things got, I had that to hold on to. Well, it was because of my ability and willingness to embrace my imagination and to see myself where I wanted to be, I set an intention of getting back to my mom, which ultimately happened. So it's a reconditioning of the mind to see things from a different perspective, and it begins with our imagination.
It's interesting that you speak of the power of what you allow sort of into your mind and your spirit, and then to move towards it with intentionality. Let me ask you a question. The cause for the separation among your siblings was your sister's illness. What happened with your sister?
She had a brain tumor, and she was rushed to the hospital one night. I'll never forget, because I was, again, about 6 years old, but it was just total chaos with the ambulances and all of that. And she was extremely ill, and she lived for about 30 more years after that, and then she passed away at the age of about 37.
37, such a young woman.
Yes. Such a beautiful soul, too.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that. How did her loss, would you say, affect you?
Years. I was in my early 30s when she died. And unfortunately, we were separated again. When I left home at 18 to start working, she was in and out of facilities. And I would go visit her as much as I could. And when she passed, a part of me left because I just loved her to death. She was, we called her grandma. she loved that, but we called her grandma. And she had this aliveness about her that just would really light up a room. And it was a deep loss. And I just count my blessings that I had an opportunity to share part of my life with such an amazing woman. But I miss her deeply.
I'm sure that I'm really sorry to hear about that. You know, we don't talk enough, I don't think, about the impact of loss, and particularly sibling loss, on the other siblings who remain.
Yes. Yeah. And again, when we were separated, I had a younger sister, and my younger sister who, you know, I'm the big brother. And when we were separated for those 7 years, there was that loss there because I was like her little protector. And I just remember as a young kid thinking, you know, I need to go back to Corpus to protect my little sister because I did miss her a lot also.
When you moved to another state?
No, another city.
Okay.
I'm from Corpus Christi, Texas,
right,
which is South Texas, and my father lived close to Galveston, Texas.
Okay. All right. And he was living with his mom.
Correct.
That's an interesting dynamic, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, he was a mama's boy, and well, I'll tell you, he loved his mom, and he couldn't see the negative impact it was having on me, especially. And again, I have done a lot of healing work around my relationship with my dad, which is a really important thing I think men need to talk about. But I made peace with him, and he passed away several years ago. And there was a clearing amongst us. Quick story. He and I, we didn't have a relationship. And as I started doing this work, healing my own heart and doing this transformational work, I realized that I needed to make peace with my dad. And so he had cancer. And one night, something in me just told me to call him. And so I was sitting up late, and I called him. And one of his lungs had been removed. And so I was just calling to check on him to see how he was doing. And as I was talking to him, I just opened my heart and I said, Dad, you know, actually I didn't call him Dad. I called him Pop. I said, Pop, you know, I just want to tell you that I know you did the best you could as a father. And I have deep love for you. Mm-hmm. I love you. Thank you for being a dad. I know you did the best that you could. And I just hope you get better. And I just want to say that I love you as a son. And all of a sudden I heard the phone drop. And his wife picks up the phone, and she says, what did you say? And I said, well, I just told him that I loved him. And he was literally sitting there crying.
Interesting.
And so he got back on the phone, and I said, Dad, you know, Pop, just take care of yourself, and I'll see you, you know, a couple weeks, whatever. I had planned to go see him. And he died 3 days later.
It's interesting, though, that opportunity for healing for both of you was very powerful for both of you.
Absolutely. I believe it gave him permission to let go in peace. I really believe that. Yeah. And so I think it was really transformational.
Michael, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we will continue discussing adversity is your greatest ally. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. Stay where you are. There's much more to come. You talked about dropping out of high school in the 11th grade, which is pretty interesting, although there are certainly a lot of folks who do that. And initially, while you didn't make any money with selling vacuum cleaners, you know, at some point, you really were quite successful. So for those folks who are listening and saying, you know, high school's a drag, I don't really want to be there, who needs high school anyway, you survived. What do you want to say?
Well, first of all, I had made a promise to my mom that I was going to go back to school and get my diploma, which I did. And so I have always known, actually, since I was 10 years old, I've always known what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. As a matter of fact, I started my first company when I was 14 years old. And so what I would say is that everybody has the capacity to create the life they desire. It is within us. But we have to make a commitment to ourselves to make that happen. And so education is not the training of the mind to remember facts, but the training of the mind to think. And so we have to constantly be educating ourselves. And so although I had dropped out of high school, I love books, absolutely love reading. I love learning new things. I made a commitment early in my life that I was going to constantly improve myself. And that's what I do. I constantly improve myself through reading and learning and listening and talking to people. And so whether or not you are pursuing a specific degree, you must commit to constant and never-ending improvement. Always expanding your mind, because as a human being, we have an infinite capacity for learning. And so we must commit to that process of learning, regardless of whether or not we go and get a degree, although I think getting degrees are great and important for some people. When we follow our purpose and our passion, I believe we will be guided to do what we are put on the planet to do. And so I know that I was put on this planet to be an entrepreneur, and fortunately enough for me, I was able to find that out early and get on that path, and now here I am.
What was your first company at 14?
I was walking to school one day, and I walked by this motorcycle shop, and I heard these two guys fighting, and I just kind of listened to the conversation, and the conversation was one of the guys was the mechanic, the other guy was the owner. The mechanic was pissed off because he didn't want to sweep the floors. And so I walk in, and I tell the manager, I say, hey, look, I'll be glad to sweep those floors for you. And the guy says, what? And he just kind of looked at me, and he just kind of caught him off guard. And he says, well, okay, if you want to sweep my floors, he says, well, how much will you charge? Now, I didn't know what to charge. I said, let me sweep the floors for you, and then you tell me how much you think it's worth. Well, he gave me an opportunity to sweep those floors, and guess what? I cleaned that garage like you could have dinner on that floor. It was so clean. He was so impressed. Now, back then, the minimum wage was $1.42 an hour. I remember $1.42 an hour. He said, "I will pay you $5 an hour to keep my garage clean." So
Wow.
every other day, I would come in and I would clean his garage. Well, it just so happened that he had some other friends that owned garages. Well, guess what? I had three other clients that I would go and I would clean their garages. So again, that was one of the first companies I started. I love technology and electronics, and so I used to install car stereos. And so a lot of my friends in high school, that's what they would do. Hey, you need your stereo installed? Go see Michael. And I made money installing car stereos. And my real big passion in high school, I was a DJ. So I had my own music equipment, and I would go and I would do parties and dances, and that's how I made money.
So you had multiple streams of income, which is what all the experts say you need to have.
Exactly.
And you were doing it at 14. I am very impressed. One of the things that you, as you created adversity, is your greatest ally. You make it a point to give the reader examples of some of the folks, very famous folks, who we tend to think of folks who are who are famous as having been famous all the time, as having been
Right.
born famous. And you give some really interesting examples. Bill Gates, for example.
Right.
For those folks who don't know the name Bill Gates, tell us, who's Bill Gates and what happened with him?
Only the richest man on the planet, the founder of Microsoft, and he actually was a college dropout, and he had started several businesses actually that had failed. And it's amazing how when we look at, as you mentioned, so-called famous people, but they're just regular people like us at the beginning, but they have a vision and a commitment to themselves that allows them to overcome any adversity. Well, I believe that every human being has that same capacity. We have to be willing to create a vision for ourselves and then make a commitment to that vision. And I think that's why a lot of people get stuck in life, because they have no vision. And it was said once that, without vision, people perish. And I think that's a powerful statement, because if we don't have a vision, then we get caught up in all the media stuff, like the presidential election and all of that, and we look outside of ourselves. But when we create a clear vision for ourselves and make a commitment to it, it's amazing what can happen. I forget who said this, but they said, obstacles are those pesky little things you see when you take your eyes off of your goal. And so when we take our eyes off of our goal, then we get distracted. When I was living in my hell, as I mentioned, I was 12 years old, and I read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And one sentence in that book stood out for me. And that sentence was, he said, "You must have definiteness of purpose." And I remember that sentence because I couldn't say the word, but it was something about that word that really stuck with me, definiteness. And so when we have that definiteness of purpose, meaning we know exactly what we want, then that becomes the vision, and then we move toward that. So it's important that we understand the power of vision and the commitment to accomplishing the vision.
You know, there's another several people that you reference, but I'm going to talk about Oprah, because you talk about the fact that she clearly had significant early trauma, and today is a media giant of tremendous proportions. And I bring her up in connection with early trauma because there are so many people who may have a vision, but get so caught up in the what if this doesn't work part of that vision that they stop themselves. They get so caught up in the fear that it won't work, or the focus on what if this bad thing happens, that they're not able to move forward. Oprah was, may have had moments like that, I think everybody does, but certainly didn't let it stop her.
Well, again, she was raped and molested at a very young age. She gave birth at 14 and her child died. That's just a few of the obstacles personally. But then if you look at it professionally, this is another thing that inspires me about Oprah. Now, she decided that she wanted to be on television. And from society's point of view, she didn't meet the model of what reporters look like in the media.
That's right.
But she didn't let that stop her. She didn't allow the media to dictate what her vision was, being being on television. And so she creates this empire. And just try to imagine the challenge she had in starting her show, and growing the Oprah Winfrey Show to what it is today. See, that to me is inspiring. And so I believe that every human being, again, has a divine purpose. She awakened to her purpose. I'm awakening to my purpose, and my purpose is I'm a huge lover of books, and so I've created my own publishing company because I absolutely love books. And so I look at stories like Oprah, and I mentioned Albert Einstein, who's my favorite scientist, in the book, because those stories give us guideposts to living our dreams. When we allow ourselves to look at how other people have overcome challenges and adversities in their lives, it inspires us and gives us hope and hopefully the impetus to move through the obstacles. Because, I think about Nelson Mandela spending 27 years in a prison. I mean, think about that, 27 years in a prison and not lose sight of his vision of ending apartheid in South Africa, and coming out with a positive attitude despite those adversities. Well, see, I don't believe these are isolated events, because I believe the reason these people are able to do that is because they tap into something within them, which I call the source. Now, the source goes by many names. You can call it God, you can call it Yahweh, you can call it Buddha, you can call it whatever you want to call it, but I just call it the source. There is an energy, there is an intelligence that created and is still creating this universe, in my opinion. And we all have access to this source. And it is our responsibility to tap into it. And when we do, it will guide us along the path to help us fulfill our true purpose in life.
You mentioned Albert Einstein. Tell that story.
Well, Albert Einstein, when he didn't speak until he was approximately 4 years old. And as a matter of fact, his parents thought that he was intellectually challenged. They didn't think he was that smart. Now, think about that for a moment. One of the most brilliant men that's ever lived on the planet. And one person thought he was actually retarded. They thought he was slow. And look at what happened. Look at how it ended up. Literally changed the world with his scientific brilliance. Once again, when we look at these stories, if we can connect to what I'm talking about, which is the source, it is the source that was in him, I believe, that allowed him to be brilliant. He talked a lot about his theories actually came to him in his dreams. His E equals MC squared was a vision that he had in his dreams. Well, I believe that the source, as I call it, the divine intelligence in the universe, that's how it communicates with human beings, through our dreams and intuitions and imaginations. And so that's why I think it's so important for us to learn to be still, to listen to that still small voice within us, which I choose to call the source.
For those folks listening who, again, have a vision, have a goal, but do get caught up in what other people tell them they can't do, or do get caught up in their own fears of failure, how do they begin to turn themselves around so that they can have that energy and that view that you've identified as being so important?
So you have to surround yourself with like-minded people. One of the greatest challenges I've had in my life is seeking support. Simply asking someone to help me, to ask for help. And that's one of the most difficult things that we'll ever do, especially for men. And so the first thing I think we have to do after we make a commitment to our own personal growth and development is to find a network of like-minded people that can support and empower us to move in the direction that we want to go. Because too many times, if we get trapped in an environment in which there's always negativity and pessimism, it'll bring you down. And so it's really challenging because we live in a culture and society that will convince you to focus your attention outside of yourself. And then we'll point to things like my race, my age, my educational background. And so we create all these stories about why we don't have the things that we really want in life. But the truth is, if we can imagine it, we can create it. And so if we're focusing our attention on creating a vision, if we have some like-minded people in our network that can not only support and empower us, but can also challenge us when we want to give up, and people say, well, man, this is too hard, I can't do it. Well, when you've got that support network that's saying, hey, man, look, you can do it, and you can maybe call somebody there that's in that network, and when you're feeling down or you want to quit, that's what lifts you up. See, regardless of what, everybody needs a team, if you will. And even the master had 12 disciples. So there's power in a network. But you have to have a network of like-minded people, and that's why it's important to build those types of relationships.
When you talk about network, you reference a few networks in your book, and what's interesting, and although I think it's certainly changing, is that women tend to be and have socialized to reach out and create networks, to create circles, to create support, and men very often, for many years, were socialized to do none of that and to sort of go it alone. And to be the strong, silent type. You're saying to men, reach out, create networks, be a part of a positive network. Why is that so important for
Well,
men?
when you look at personal development as a genre, if you will, it's overwhelmingly women. And here's what I believe. The female paradigm, if you will, has always been based on what we might call soft skills, the ability to connect feelings, emotions, intuition, things like that. Women, when they come together in these types of environments, they really work on empowering themselves, or what I call their interiority, looking at how they feel, what they think, and so forth. So that's obviously, this is a generalization, but when women network, a lot of times that's what they do. They're really committed to how they feel. Men, on the other hand, we're taught how to think. So we come together and we start strategizing and kind of figure out how to build this company. And so we aren't given the space to connect to our hearts and talk about how we feel because culturally, men have been conditioned that's wrong. So when you start talking about support networks, especially for men, and I do a lot of work with men, actually, most of my work is with men, creating what I'm calling a new paradigm of masculinity. And in this new paradigm, what I challenge men to do when they come together and network is to actually learn how to incorporate soft skills into their life, because it is the soft skills that allows us to truly be successful. The reason so many of us as men are unhappy, and unfortunately, a lot of men don't even recognize that they're unhappy. Why? Because we've been taught to have, the cars, the clothes, the jobs, the titles, the women, all of that. And so, if that's all we're focusing on, which is the externals, we'll always be unfulfilled. You will never feel fulfilled with stuff. You will only feel fulfilled with your interiority, with your feelings, your soul, your spirit, whatever you want to call it. And so putting yourself in an environment where you have other men who are courageous enough, because that's what it takes. It takes courage for a man to sit in a space with other men and be vulnerable and be sensitive and share from their hearts. It's challenging, but I believe there's a new paradigm that's happening, and more men are beginning to wake up to this idea that, you know what? I want my life to be deeper. I want my life to be richer, to be fuller. And that won't happen with external stuff. That will only happen when we look within. And once we look within and do that healing work and create those networks, we can go out and create as much money, as much business, as much stuff as we like. But we have to fill the hole within our souls first. And that's the inner work that we have to do. And so the importance of networking is, if you're truly committed to living a rewarding and fulfilling life, the network has to include a space for you to get real. And getting real means that we're willing to look at the hurt, look at the pain, look at the disappointment, and heal all of that and move past that. It's a process that, again, more men, I believe, are waking up to it, but it's still not a lot of men who are courageous enough to join in this conversation.
Michael, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation. Don't go away, folks. Talk about the importance of being willing to take full responsibility for your life, get out of your comfort zone, and you say that fear is a choice. So again, I go back to the notion that so many people, men and women, but I know your focus is men, allow their fears of what they can't do stop them from doing much of anything. And you say fear is a choice. Who would choose to be afraid?
Well, here's the thing. Most people, I would say, are what I call unconscious, meaning they have not done any inner work to bring awareness to who they really are as human beings. So most people live a life of fear, and we're not aware that we're afraid. We're just trapped in this idea that, you know, my life can only be this way, and we don't realize that what may be keeping us stuck in that life is some unresolved fear. And so one of the things that I talk about in the book, the chapter on what's called Making Peace with Your Past, probably one of the most important chapters in the book, because when we make peace with our past, it brings up the fears that we may not have even recognized we had. For example, when I first started this process, if someone would have asked me, well, what are you afraid of? My answer would have been nothing. I couldn't think of anything that I was afraid of. I didn't know. Well, during doing this work, what I discovered was the predominant fear that I had in my life was the fear of abandonment as a result of the experience I mentioned earlier. So it was this fear of abandonment which created in me a deep sense of shame. And so my life was driven by this negative energy called shame. All of my successes early on in my life were the result of me not feeling good enough about myself. So what I tried to do was do things, accomplish things so people would like me. And so I didn't realize I had that fear. I was unconscious of it. And I think, again, a lot of people are unaware that they have these fears because they've not done this work. And that's why personal development is so important, because what it does is it brings to light, it shines the light in the dark places that we're sometimes afraid to look at. And the process of personal growth and development, or shall I say personal transformation, is being courageous enough to figure out, first of all, what am I afraid of? What scares me? And when I can face it, I can move through it. And so, It's been said that fear is false experiences appearing real. And so basically, we have these subconscious beliefs about ourselves and the world around us that sabotage us if we aren't willing to look at them. So we have to be willing to shine the light inside of ourselves so that we can see the things that we're afraid of so we can move through them.
And of course, there are many people who are afraid to look at the fear. So it gets to be really, really challenging. You mentioned an organization called the Mankind Project. What is that?
The Mankind Project is something that I was introduced to in 2002, I think. I had been doing a lot of personal growth work and, again, healing my own heart and doing a lot of transformational inner work. And I was sitting at home late one, well, no, actually it wasn't late, it was during the day. And I saw this documentary about this program where these men were talking about the changing roles of masculinity. And in the documentary, the men were talking about challenges of being a man. And, you know, a lot of people will say, but, you know, we live in a male-dominated society, so what is it about men and why do they feel threatened or feeling that they're being attacked? Well, I think, again, culturally speaking, although we live in this, you know, this male-dominated society, I believe that it's caused a lot of pain and suffering in men's lives because men are stuck in some antiquated roles of what it means to be a man. Because if you look at how rapidly the world is changing, for example, I don't know if you're aware that for the first time in this country's history, there are more women in the workforce than men. There's also more women graduating from college than men. So there's this shift, I believe, and I think it's a positive shift, actually. But in this documentary, men were just talking about the frustrations and the challenges of being a man. And this organization, the Mankind Project, actually has a program called the New Warrior Training. And the New Warrior Training is designed to challenge men to look at the erroneous beliefs about what it means to be a man. And it's a powerful 3-day process in which men are challenged to also face their fears deeply, but to really look at how we've been conditioned to act as men. And interestingly enough, I watched the documentary. I said, you know what? I think I want to do that. So I signed up to participate in this New Warrior Training, and it was life-changing for me because I had been doing workshops and seminars for, you know, men and women for a while. But when I did the New Warrior program, I realized that I had a deep distrust for men that I wasn't even aware of. I didn't even realize that there was a part of me that didn't know that it was okay to experience intimacy with a man. Because in our culture, you know, there's so much homophobia that men are afraid to express how they feel to another man because they don't want to be accused of being gay. But as human beings, we have this ability to connect with each other. And so why is it so difficult for a man to say, I love you, to another man? Well, we have a culture, a masculine culture that, in my opinion, is antiquated, and that's what keeps men from really truly connecting with each other. And so the New Warrior Program helps men do that. It helps men recognize how the cultural conditioning has shaped our beliefs about what it means to be a man, and it's important for us to break free from that conditioning if we really want to be happy. As a matter of fact, I wrote a book called A New Conversation with Men as a result of participating in the New Warrior Training, because I wanted to share some of the lessons that I learned in that program with other men to support them in transforming their lives.
And, you know, it's interesting. You referenced the fact that, you know, for so often, and still for many men, there's this notion that they don't want to be accused of being gay. And it's such a shame that we live in a society where if person A has a different experience from person B, then all of a sudden it's an accusation. It's mm-hmm. not a, you know, you're who you are and I'm who I am, and let's just keep it moving. And that's just not the world in which we live. So to be able to really fight against so many of the isms that are in the world today, I think is also really, really important. It's empowering, it's hard, but it's so freeing when you're able to do that.
Yeah, and you know, in that book I wrote, I discovered what I call the five illusions of manhood. And it is these five illusions that causes the majority of pain and suffering in men's lives. And I'll share those real quickly.
Great.
Illusion number one is to be a man, you must be non-emotional and disconnected. Illusion number two, you must use sexual conquest as a gauge for manhood. Illusion number three, you must have money and material possessions to be a man. Rule number four, to be a man, you must have titles, positions, and power. And illusion number five is to be a man, you must constantly compete with and try to outdo other men. And so if you look at those five illusions, the majority of pain and suffering men experience is a result of being trapped in one of those illusions.
And they're exhausting. I mean, if that's how you're living your life, you're exhausted before you even get up out of bed in the morning.
Exactly.
If you're able to get up out of bed in the morning, because many men deal with a depression that's so significant that literally even getting up out of the bed is a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's amazing. When I was going through those dark periods of my life, you know, when I went through my divorce and bankruptcy and all of that, I didn't even recognize that I was depressed until I got to the point where it was either get help or die. I didn't know depression. I was so disconnected from my emotions and how I felt that I didn't even recognize the symptoms of depression. And fortunately for me, I was able to one night have this moment of clarity, which I mentioned, and then I gained the courage to first and foremost go to therapy to get help. And it was the most freeing, liberating thing I'd ever done in my life.
And, you know, you talk about in adversity is your greatest ally. You talk about a conversation that you had with a friend who really sort of helped you to break through the I'm fine, everything's good mask that you were wearing to what was really going on with you underneath.
Yeah, it was really powerful because I hid behind positivity for a very long time. And, you know, positivity is a blessing and a curse sometimes, and for me it was both. Well, in this conversation, what happened was I was actually staying with a friend, trying to find a job and just trying to get back on my feet. And she came home one day after my job search, and I had been rejected from several jobs, and she asked me how I was feeling, and I said I'm fine. And she said, "No, Michael, tell me, how are you feeling right now?" And I said, "Oh, you know what? I've got some more interviews tomorrow. I'm sure I'm going to find a job." And, you know, I started giving her this story about, you know, what had happened and being positive. And she says, "Michael," she says, "just cut the crap." She says, "Tell me right now, how are you feeling?" And I couldn't really answer the question. And so she sort of prodded me. She says, "Michael, how does it feel to not be able to go see your kid because you don't have any money right now?" And I just kind of looked at her and just kind of listened. And she says, "How does it feel to have to depend on me to take care of you while you're searching for a job?" And as she kept prodding me, I started to allow myself to start feeling. And all of a sudden, I started feeling this really deep sadness. And she just kept talking, and I kept listening. And all of a sudden, I kind of connected to where she was going, and I started to share how sad I was, and I started crying. And she just came up to me and she embraced me and she just held me and she says, "Michael, it's okay to feel. Just let it go." And all of this sadness and shame and hurt just started pouring out of me, and she just embraced me. And I mean, I'm just bawling, and I allowed myself to surrender to the feelings. And the feelings just poured out of me, and it was very healing and cathartic. And so I just sat there and I just went, "Whoa, wow." And that was one of those transformational moments when I realized that I still had a lot of emotional work to do because I had, again, bought into the new thought thinking that everything was okay and I should always be great and positive. But she taught me that until I made peace with my past, I would never, ever be happy. And when I asked her, well, what do you think I need to do? And that's what she told me. She says, you got to be willing to get out of your head and into your heart. And I'm like, well, what the heck does that mean? And it was a confusing, powerful experience. But what I learned was that, let's see, there's a let's see, I think I've got it here. The quote that Ayanna Von Zant said, let me see here, if you give me just one second, that really helped me. Because again, I was hiding behind this positivity. And Ayanna Von Zant wrote this, and it says, until you heal the wounds of your past, you are going to bleed. You can bandage the bleeding with food, with alcohol, with drugs, with work, with cigarettes, with sex, but eventually it will all ooze through and stain your life. You must find the strength to open the wounds, stick your hands inside, pull out the core of the pain that is holding you in your past, the memories, and make peace with them. And so in that moment, what I realized was I had to be willing to dig in there and put my hands in there and pull out the wounds of my past. That's what I learned from that one transaction with my friend, that I had some wounds that I was still holding on to. And in healing those wounds, I became free.
The experiences that you've had and your willingness to share your journey, I would suggest, has really been extraordinary for everyone who's been listening to our conversation today. For those who'd like to know more about your work and your, what you've been doing, can you give us a website address?
Yeah, if you go to adversityisyourgreatestally.com, there's more information there. There's a lot of powerful resources there to inspire you and give you hope and inspiration. And you can also find me at coachmichaeltaylor.com to keep up with where I am around the country.
Sounds terrific. Michael Taylor, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, author of Adversity is Your Greatest Ally: How to Use Life's Challenges as Stepping Stones to Live the Life of Your Dreams. Thank you, Michael Taylor, very much.
Thank you, Pamela.
And folks, thank you for joining me on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications, and it is available to you on demand 24/7 by going to myndtalk.org, or you can simply go to iTunes and download the Mind Talk app. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, you can send an email to pamela@mindtalk.org. That is a confidential email address. Only I will see it. So again, that's pamela@myndtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, well, it's unacceptable. Take care.